When you believe that everyone is infinitely unique and has an infinitely unique path and journey, and that everyone has a unique perspective that is valuable, that when added to the collective consciousness is actually a vital piece to the human experience and human meaning, how could you not practice empathy when you believe something like that? Good morning, dear listener. Today I want to talk about two different theories of God that resonate with me, one of which is loosely defined elsewhere in esotericism and other things. So it's not something that I completely came up with on my own, but it still resonates. And another theory, which is actually quite different, but is something that I started developing when I was leaving religion behind, which sounds really funny because to a religious person, they'd be like, how do you leave religion behind but have a theory of God? And it's like, well, you have a fundamental misunderstanding of what religion is. But anyway, the first thing that I want to cover is the first theory I mentioned. And really quick, the reason why I want to cover these theories is A, so that you can understand my perspective better, so that you can understand where I'm coming from when I'm talking about spiritual things or personal growth or creativity. I especially want to relate this to creativity. But the other reason is because I think that I will discover some more connections for myself, and I hope that it will do the same for you. I think that covering a theory of creation is something that can help us reframe the way that we look at the world and our lives and our purpose. So lots of exciting things. This first theory I actually came across within the last couple years, and it's really come along as I've started to put my own thoughts out there into the world via social media. I think I stumbled across this theory when I had Enter the Void, which was my first podcast, and it quickly became one of my favorite ideas, probably just because it resonated. I'm somebody that likes to pay attention to patterns, and this theory makes a lot of sense to me. So I'm not going to be going off of any strict description or interpretation. There is panentheism, which is a term that was coined by a philosopher in like the 1800s. And it essentially describes God as everything. So the divine is everything. It flows through everything. Everything is God, but God is also above the universe. So that part doesn't necessarily make sense to me. But, you know, just because something isn't logical doesn't mean that it's not a possibility. It just doesn't resonate with me, that part of it. Like, God is above the universe, but God, the universe is God. Like, yeah, I don't know. We could dive into that, but this isn't really about panentheism. I just wanted to draw a parallel here because the theory that I've kind of stumbled across and then also developed further on my own is essentially this idea that there is a divine consciousness out there. And when I mean out there, we always say out there, like, I don't know, somewhere in space or something. And if it's really a divine consciousness, then where it is probably isn't even relevant because it can be anywhere. But that's besides the point. So you have God as this divine consciousness, and It can essentially do, and I say it also because the theory of like gender doesn't really correlate with this a whole lot. So I just view gender as like a more of a social construct, which is crazy that that's coming out of my mouth because I would have never thought that I would come to a place where that's what I think. But I think in general, there actually is a difference between gender and sex. I don't think sex is a social construct because it's physically observable. But gender is typically the outward representation of a combination of feminine and masculine energies. So that goes more into the second theory that I want to talk to you about. So gender doesn't really apply here. That's why I say it when I refer to God. God can do whatever it wants, whenever it wants, anytime. And that would just be boring. I've covered this on Enter the Void a while ago. Like, imagine that you are a being that can just do anything all the time. That would be boring. It would suck. It'd be like watching the same movie over and over and over. You know how it's going to end. You know everything that's going to happen. And I mean, you may think that you have a favorite movie that you could watch, you know, every day, but every day for 80 years is way different than knowing everything that's going to happen, when it's going to happen, having complete power for eternity. I just don't see any way that that being could not get bored unless it has the power to unbore itself or forget everything. But that kind of leads me to my point. What better way to experience nuance and excitement than to forget everything or split yourself into an infinite number of consciousnesses? Because I every time I talk about this theory, I can't figure out how to say that part because it's like consciousnesses, consciousnesses. Either way, you split yourself into infinite versions of consciousness and experience life from an infinitely unique way, possibly an infinite number of times. Now, humanity isn't infinite, at least according to recorded history, but imagine that. I mean, you have all the power to do so. So you become all of these separate beings that are embodying a tiny fractal of your consciousness. And in each of them, there is an internal knowing that there is something beyond. Almost like when you're acting out of character in your life and you get this feeling that like you're not being true to yourself. That feeling is there because you know who you really are. It just takes certain experiences to craft certain perspectives and refine certain character traits that were already there. It's just about revealing it to you. It's about that journey of exploration and discovery and experience. And so that's the basis of the first theory, and the theory that I've kind of been viewing my life through lately, as in the past year or two. Just really like this theory has kind of been a foundation of a lot of my philosophies that I've discussed online and in my writing. And I just think it's so cool because, without getting too deep into like why I like this better than religion, I mean, maybe that would be helpful to cover in this episode, but that's going to turn this into an hour-long episode. I would rather do 2 30-minute episodes. So next time, what I'll cover is like why I do not resonate with religion and why I've left religion behind. And honestly, to take it a step further, why I'm coming to a place in my life where I think that religion is actually a bad thing. I know, spooky, crazy. I think I've been afraid of saying things that are going to polarize people, because if you know anything about astrology, I'm a Libra moon, and the moon governs your emotional personality. And with me being a Libra, the sign of the Libra is the scale, a perfectly balanced scale. We want balance. We want harmony. We don't want to rub anyone the wrong way. We don't want to upset anybody. We want everyone to get along. And so this entire time that I've been sharing my thoughts on the internet, which has been about a year and a half now, I have been afraid to say the harshness of what I really feel. Because I don't want to turn people who are religious away from what I have to say. In fact, I wish that religious people could hear what I say and it would make sense to them, and they would maybe reconsider or question their beliefs. But here's the thing. If a religious person couldn't tolerate hearing me say that religion is a bad thing, then they're not in a position in their life where they're ready to question their beliefs in the first place, because they still identify with them so strongly. And any sort of deviance from that is a personal attack to them. So all that said, I'm actually coming to a place where I think religion is a bad thing. And I'll cover that in the next episode. But I said all that to say that this concept is closely tied to my thoughts and feelings about religion. How has this impacted my life? Well, first of all, it's made me a lot more, I would say, open and accepting of different types of people. And I know that sounds funny coming from the guy who just said that religion is a bad thing, but here's the thing. Like, I do think that religion can be silly. I think that a lot of religious people choose to be ignorant. But I also think that other people that are not religious choose to be ignorant about other things, like health or parenting or they're bad driving. They think they're a good driver, but they know they're lying to themselves and they suck at driving. So again, religion is everything to religious people, but it's not really much at all to non-religious people unless they have religious trauma. And so it's not really like me saying that non-religious people are better than religious people. It's just that I think that is something that religious people choose to be ignorant about. So I've become a lot more open to people's unique attributes. And I think I've also just become more empathetic in general. Because, and this takes practice to realize, especially when you're in the heat of a, you know, a frustrating moment or whatever it might be, it's very easy to kind of go off the rails and think very narrow-minded things. Like when someone cuts you off in traffic, you're like, man, that guy's a fucking idiot. And it's like, well, are they an idiot, or did a crazy series of events lead them to this moment and lead you to this moment, and they just like had to do a certain thing at a certain time, and it's as simple as that. And it has nothing to do with you, and it has nothing to do with their overall intelligence. So it takes practice to think that way, but this idea that we are all fractals of God has led me to think that way more often. And why is this helpful? Because you feel genuine love more often. You feel empathy. And I covered this on a previous episode just recently. It's time we redefine empathy. But empathy is the act. It's not like a special ability that only a few people are born with. This is something that everyone possesses. The ability to project your consciousness outside of your own ego and perceive someone else's ego. from their point of view. That's empathy. And I feel like I've been able to practice empathy more. Now you may ask why. It's like, well, how does all of us being, you know, fractals of God, for lack of a better word, how is that leading you to have more empathy? And I think the reason is because it makes it to where we don't all have the same purpose or path. And in order for you to truly understand somebody, if they have a different path than you, and that's okay, you need to exercise empathy in order to really connect with people. So religion, for instance, in Christianity, everyone has the same path, which is accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, spread his gospel, obey the commandments, and cross your fingers and toes that the tyrannical God that you worship doesn't smite you down and that you get to live with him forever, which sounds like a total blast. Yeah, I'm a little salty, but that's essentially what's happening here. And you're told the whole way that you don't even deserve to have happiness or love. Everyone has the same path when you look at life through that lens. And so you don't need to exercise empathy because everyone is an evil schmuck. Everyone is of dirt. Everyone is an abomination in the eyes of God just by nature. Wonder where that nature came from. We did it to ourselves. Okay, but it still came from somewhere. So that just doesn't allow for empathy. And that is, again, why I think it kind of ties into some of the issues that I have with religion. When you believe that everyone is infinitely unique and has an infinitely unique path and journey, and that everyone has a unique perspective that is valuable, that when added to the collective consciousness is actually a vital piece to the human experience and human meaning, how could you not practice empathy when you believe something like that? And anyone can get anything twisted, right? You could take anything and fall into this belief that, like, you're superior to people because of ABC. I mean, that's exactly what the issue with religion is most religions give you moral superiority over others. And again, that strips away empathy. This makes you realize, you know what? Like, I don't know any better than anyone else at any, like, maybe at one thing I might, but not in the macro. Like, everyone knows different things better than other people. Everyone's experienced different things in different ways. It's important for us to share our experiences and our ideas. That's how we live in the world that we live in. That's why we have houses and telephone poles and fire trucks and fireworks, because we shared ideas and we listened to each other, and then we manifested our consciousness into physical reality. So I think this theory is beautiful. And I've thought a lot about, well, you know, what happens? Is there a goal? And I actually just made a reel for Instagram. I haven't posted it yet, but the reel is about loving the process. And we've all heard that phrase, but what does it mean? Well, I basically explain in that video that the goal facilitates the process, and the process is meant to be enjoyed. So if we want to look at this theory, like, okay, what's the goal? Well, I guess eventually what would make sense is that we continue to collaborate, we continue to expand the collective consciousness and strengthen it. And as we continue to increase our technological capabilities and our spiritual understanding, I would assume eventually we get to a point where we actually start to become one being again. And you can look at the universe the same way. Let's look at the Big Bang. you have this explosion that happens from all of the matter that's ever existed that was existing in one point in the singularity, and then it expanded outward extremely fast. And then there's two theories of the universe as well. One theory is the heat death of the universe, where essentially everything is still slowly, in comparison to how it used to be, everything is still slowly expanding. And that's how we've been able to essentially prove the Big Bang, as much as you could prove anything, which is that if everything's expanding, there's a point that in space and time that it's expanding from, and we've been able to kind of track that. So that theory of the heat death is that everything will expand away from everything else so far to where there's just nothing left. All of the stars will be separated from their planets. All the planets will be separated from the planets. And when the stars die, and then everything that they give off also just kind of fades away and drifts outward, then boom, everything's just gone. Which is actually a really terrifying thing to think about. Like, I don't get scared of much, especially like scared of thinking about much, because I think about stuff a lot. But that is a scary thought. And honestly, I don't want to believe it. Like, maybe it's true. It doesn't really matter, because the chances of me being alive when that happens billions and billions of years from now is like slim to none. It's possible. Technology, baby. But yeah, that's a scary thought. There's another theory though, which is that eventually the gravity will overtake the inertia from the initial Big Bang. And the gravity will eventually slow everything down. We will stop expanding outward, and then it will slowly and then progressively faster pull everything back together. And so if you have all of the matter in the universe that's getting pulled back together into the singularity again, then boom, all of these fractals of the Big Bang, all of these fractals of the singularity become one again. It just took a long time. And the singularity was expressing itself in infinitely unique ways. There's no planet that's exactly the same. There's no asteroid that's exactly the same. There is no star that has the exact same orbit around the center of its galaxy. There is no galaxy that is exactly the same. There is no snowflake, no tree, no sunset that is exactly the same. And so the universe that we live in is the infinitely unique expression of the singularity. And then this is where atheism ties in, because a lot of atheists believe that the finality of death is the thing that makes life precious. Life is precious because it is fleeting, because it is finite. And so maybe the heat death of the universe is real. Maybe it's going to happen. And maybe as much as we want things to continue, as much as we want to continue to live and experience, maybe we just don't get to. And maybe that's how it works. And I think that a lot of people would become better people if they believed that, not worse. Because when you think that there's an afterlife, you open the door to a lack of accountability and procrastination on actually being a good person. Oh, God will take care of it later. Or, oh, God knows my heart. So like, God knows I wanted to be a good person. Oh, grace alone. By grace alone are we saved. As in, it doesn't really matter what I do, because none of the actions that I take can impact the eternity of God's grace. It's like, well, doesn't that kind of make you a shitty person though? Because you're choosing to not become better when that's literally the main ability that sets us apart from the rest of the animal kingdom, I would say, is our higher level of consciousness, our ability to act consciously. Intuition is a gift. And so this whole theory of, you know, being fractals of God really emphasizes intuition, trusting yourself because you have a unique journey and not one person has all the answers for anyone else. It emphasizes the importance of empathy. And it also gets you to practice acceptance, accepting that, yeah, we could all live on beyond this, but there could also be absolutely nothing. And that could actually be okay. Or it could be horrible. I mean, it's mentally horrible to think about because we're mortal and we don't like pain and death. But they seem pretty inescapable. So that's theory number one. And I'm so glad that I'm doing an episode on this because I just drew a parallel to this theory that honestly strengthens it more in my mind. And again, this is confirmation bias, right? I've seen patterns of this. I see, at least I think I see, like physical proof that this theory is very highly, not even just possible, but probable. So I understand this could be a confirmation bias, but the connection that I just drew from this theory of like God as a being, as a conscious being, and us as conscious beings, and the singularity as a physical thing in reality, and then the universe, which came from that. I mean, that I think is a very cool and a very strong parallel to draw. A connection to draw. So I just learned something more about this theory that I hold in my mind, which is why this is important. So number two is quite interesting. You see, I grew up Mormon, and Mormons believe in a heavenly father or God, which is pretty like common Christian thing. It's where the whole like joke about Sky Daddy comes from, because it's like very clearly a white man with a beard and a white robe, and God is just like in the sky somewhere, like lives in heaven. And yeah, that's basically all there is. And then, you know, over time, women in Mormonism kind of have tried to speak up about certain things. And somewhere along the line, this concept of a heavenly mother came along, but it's this very taboo, very like unspoken thing. You're not really allowed to talk about it. You're not allowed to theorize about it. And when I mean it, I mean her in this instance. You're not allowed to theorize about heavenly mother. And there's a few reasons why this idea would even come up. And I'm giving some context before I actually explain my theory, because I want you to understand where I came from and like how this theory developed. So Heavenly Mother, when I first heard about her, I was like, I didn't really think much of it, but I do remember it making sense to me. Because as a kid, I wanted to make sense of things, and this is why I experienced so much cognitive dissonance in the religion that I grew up in, because there are so many contradictions, there are so many plot holes, there are so many things that are unexplained and basically just explained away with the same auto responses that you'll get from every single person in the church. I mean, this is a very, very well executed cult. And they've, when I say that there's a lot of holes when you really like step back and open your eyes. But when you're in it, everything has an explanation. Even if it's not a good one, it's still an explanation. Like when something can't be explained, the auto response is the Lord works in mysterious ways. It's like, that's not a fucking explanation. That's a cop out, because you don't know that. I say all the time that the universe has other plans. And when I say that, I'm vaguely saying that we don't know everything and we shouldn't force our will onto every single thing, and that practicing acceptance is important because it's how you experience life more effortlessly and happily. What I'm not saying is there is a specific being that I've attached a physical label to and a name to that works in mysterious ways and is doing all these things. Like, I don't know that. I'm not going to pretend I know that. So anyway, there's a lot of holes when you step back. And this idea of Heavenly Mother actually made sense to me because I saw a pattern. And this theory that we're really not supposed to talk about or theorize about, you're not supposed to give lessons on it. There's no scripture on Heavenly Mother. Heavenly Mother is not mentioned in the Bible or the Book of Mormon or really any of the texts that Mormons or Christians in general read, at least from what I'm aware of. I know that there's a couple books that were removed from the Bible, like the Gospel of Thomas and the Book of Enoch. I actually haven't read those personally. I don't know how much I care to. Not really interested in the Bible anymore. But as far as I know, Heavenly Mother is not mentioned. But it makes sense to me because I see a pattern. What is that pattern? Well, duh. I came from a father and a mother. So two beings had the capability to create me from almost nothing, right? A sperm and an egg. And they did, but it required both of them. So why would it make sense for God to be only one being, when clearly there is a pattern in nature of creation requiring two? Now, don't get a wedgie here. I'm not saying that it is divine and holy for a man and woman to be together. A man and a woman. Amen and a woman. I don't know if you guys ever saw that meme of the congressman going, like closing out a prayer or something. He's like, amen and a woman. Like, what the fuck, dude? That's so funny. So anyway, that's not what I'm saying. I actually thought that for a while. So here's how this happened. It resonated with me, this idea of Heavenly Mother, and it cooked in my mind for years, just in the background. When I left Mormonism at 16, which was a very difficult thing to do because I was living in Utah where everyone is Mormon, and my family and my grandparents and whatever, everyone acted like I basically just committed spiritual suicide, which I did in their eyes. It was a horrible, difficult thing to go through, and I did it basically completely alone. But when I left, I was basically numb for a while, for a couple years. And then when I was 18, I started actually like thinking about stuff. I stepped away originally because I just needed some space. So then I started thinking about things. And one of the things that I was thinking about was the nature of God. And I had a hard time denying the existence of God. I told myself, oh, I'll never talk badly about the church. It's just not right for me. And then obviously that's not true anymore, because I see more now than I did before. And it was the same thing with God. It's like, oh, I could never deny the existence of God. And even to this day, like, I just see so many patterns that point to like intelligent creation. But I'm totally comfortable with saying there's definitely a possibility that God doesn't exist as this like divine consciousness or being or whatever. It's a core facet of my philosophy and the way that I approach life, that belief that there is. However, I can openly acknowledge that it's possible that there isn't. I'm not like offended by that at all. And it doesn't threaten me. So if you're in a position where saying something that you don't believe in threatens you, then you should probably address that and think about that. So I know that I go off on these like long tangents, but trust that I will always come back 99% of the time. So I was questioning things about God, and I've tossed around this idea of duality where it's like, well, I was taught that, you know, everything is black and white, and maybe God isn't this, you know, all powerful, all good, benevolent being. And maybe God is actually the embodiment of a perfect balance between good and evil, and that they are both necessary in order for the universe to operate. But the hole with that is that, you know, a tree, or let's see, termites aren't evil for eating a tree, right? An asteroid isn't evil for slamming into the earth and wiping out the dinosaurs. I don't know if that's evil. Maybe it is, but it's hard for me to define it that way. So the whole, like, God is the embodiment of both good and evil, that kind of fell apart quickly. Here's where things got interesting. I started dating my wife, Nicole, and I started going back to church so that I could be with her. And that's a story for another day. But we both started feeling a lot of cognitive dissonance. Like, we started becoming aware of it. We were older. You know, I was 16 when I left the church at first, and I was 19 when I started going back for her because I wanted to marry her. And if you know anything about Mormonism, you know that you must get married in the temple the right way, or else your marriage doesn't count and you can't live together forever. Well, when you marry someone, you want to be with them forever. So that's what I wanted to do. And I did what I had to do. But at this time, we, especially after we got married, we experienced a lot of cognitive dissonance, and we started asking a lot of questions and kind of exploring what intuition really means. We didn't know that that's what it was at the time, but we felt very strongly that certain things just weren't entirely true, or that certain things were misleading, or that certain things were missing. And so we both kind of started co-developing this idea of God, which is essentially that we are all children of God, and that God is a parental unit. So there is a heavenly father and a heavenly mother. And we were still in the safe zone with this for the most part, because, well, there's, you know, rumors of heavenly mother being a thing, but we've been told by the general authorities of the corporation of the LDS Church that we cannot talk about it or theorize about it because there's no doctrine on it, and it will be revealed to us someday, as in, we don't want you to believe that there is divine femininity, because then our entire religion would fall apart. But we also can't overtly fight back against it and deny it, because it resonates with some of you so strongly, and we would piss all of you off, and then our religion would fall apart. So they're trying to play damage control. But we were kind of in the clear, because there was the theory that Heavenly Mother was a thing. And so we basically started noticing these patterns of, okay, if parents bring a child into the world, and for a period of time, they teach this child about how the world works, and they help them learn and grow, and they allow them to make mistakes. And then eventually the child grows up, moves out of the house, lives on their own, explores the world in their own way. And then eventually also, starts a family. And the cycle continues. Now, again, this is a general pattern. Not everyone can have kids, either because they're, you know, infertile or because they are in a relationship with the same sex and they just like physically can't have kids together. So there's a lot of reasons why someone might not be able to have kids. But in general, the reason why we're all here is because a man and a woman procreated and had you as a child. So stick with me here. If that's the case, then does it not make sense that we have heavenly parents and ditch the whole idea of heaven? At the time, we had to use that because that's all we really knew. And we were, again, trying to stay in the safe zone. And we were trying to justify our beliefs. But the further we dug, the more we realized that we couldn't and that they were severely skewed from reality. But wouldn't it make sense if there is a heavenly father and a heavenly mother who brings us here to earth and for a period of time, let's say 80 years instead of 18. I say 80 because that's like close to the average life expectancy. Maybe it's less than that in the US, but we're here for 80 years. We get to play in this sandbox where we learn about life and we learn about love and heartbreak and all of these different things. And then eventually we move out or we die. And then we kind of go off on our own for a little while. We can still talk to our parents. We can still ask them for advice, get their help. But for the most part, we're out on our own in the universe. And we choose a partner that we want to create with. And again, back when we were kind of throwing around the idea of this theory, it did still rely heavily on marriage and, you know, especially between a man and a woman. Like, we never thought there was anything wrong with marriage outside of, you know, outside of like a traditional marriage or like homosexual relationships. Like, we never saw a problem with that. That's actually a big thing about Mormonism and Christianity in general that we did not resonate with ever. But we just saw it as like, well, you know, you can have that. But it, as far as what we can see, it does require a man and a woman to create things. Now, I believe a little differently. So to kind of redefine this theory, this is where my heart is at now. And again, this is I'm kind of like putting these two theories on a scale, and I don't know which one carries more weight. I don't know which one is more like realistic or grounded in truth. But what I do know is that they both resonate with me. The first theory that I explained, and now this one. So now that you understand, sorry, I'm like moving around a lot because I'm moving around the microphone to get my water bottle. I haven't recorded an episode this long in a while. So this is where my heart's at now with this theory. I believe, and again, like I don't like strictly identify with these things. These are just ideas that make sense to me and that have helped me in my life. I think it's less about having to have, you know, a man and a woman together to create. And I actually think it's just more about consciousness. But it's this theory of the infinite family. So I think that we're here on this earth and we learn and we grow, we experience, we fail, we cry, we laugh. We build, we destroy, we basically play around. And this life that we live, this world that we live in, is a perfect opportunity to understand the basics of reality. We are playing with reality in the three-dimensional realm. Now, this is important because when your consciousness is in its infancy, both like physically as a child, but also just metaphysically as a soul, you need physical proof in order to internalize things for the most part. So what better way to do that than to have a three-dimensional space, a three-dimensional realm to play around in? Not only do you, in doing this, learn about the things that humans go through, like you learn about the emotional and psychological and philosophical and spiritual implications of being a human and just being a conscious being, but also you learn about physical reality. You learn about how things physically work. You learn about geometry and physics. And I mean, whether you want to or not, for instance, let's say you don't study physics in school. You never studied physics. You don't understand. I don't remember really anything from physics class. So take me for example. But I learn about physics in reality when I walk down the stairs or when I go to the lake and swing off of a rope swing. And I jump off the cliff, swing on the rope swing, and I have to learn like what point of my swing to let go so that I know how far I'm going to fall and where I'm going to land in the water. Like, that's physics. People that end up on Fail Army, 99% of the time, those people don't understand physics. They continuously choose to not notice patterns. And so they end up being those people that they're way too high up on a cliff and the rope that they're swinging off of doesn't have any tension on it. And they weigh 300 pounds. And they're the people that end up flopping on the shore 20 feet down instead of swinging out into the water because they don't understand physics. And they probably continuously do stuff like that. That's how I say Fail Army as if you know what that is. Fail Army is a YouTube channel. It's like one of the most popular ones. If you've never watched it and you just like goofy fails, like it's kind of like America's Funniest Home Videos, that kind of thing. Like people like that end up on Fail Army. They continue to not learn. So I think in this life, you have infinite opportunities to choose to learn and grow. And I think that that carries on beyond this life. I don't think that heaven and hell are a place that we go to. I think it's a state that we're in that we choose in the present. So if you are choosing to learn from your mistakes and grow and create more authentically, then you are creating a heaven for yourself. And that pattern will continue beyond this life. You'll receive either another chance at mortality, you'll receive another mortal experience, or you will receive something else. And by receive, I just mean like the universe is full of give and receive. So you give certain effort and you receive certain experiences and opportunities. So when you die, the patterns from this life, you get an opportunity to learn and grow after this. And I don't know what that looks like. But how does this play into the eternal family? Well, it's not just a family of people, but it's a family of creations. So for instance, my eternal family is going to, on the micro, it's going to look like this podcast and Transcendia and the videos that I make and my dog that I've raised and eventually the children that my wife and I have and their children and their children. And then when I pass on, if I want to choose creation and life and goodness and experience and nuance, then I will continue to explore that. And I might be able to continue creating on a larger scale, where now that I understand the basics of reality, I get to experience and experiment with creation on a larger scale, creating my own planet, playing around with life on that planet and, you know, experimenting, trying new things. And lo and behold, somehow I've gotten to this position where I am also God in my own realm, in my own corner of the universe, creating in tandem with my wife because I want to, not because it's necessary. And now all of a sudden, this social construct of gender, where we just try to basically represent ourselves, and sex has previously defined that, and now it's not defining that as much, that construct is kind of out the window. All of a sudden, the mechanism of procreation is really just a metaphor, and that it doesn't actually require a man and a woman to create. It's just an example of what is possible when you put your, when you project your consciousness in a particular direction. Our art is our children. So this, there's so much that I could cover about this theory, but eventually it's this idea that if you want to choose to create, you can create infinitely, and you will continue to get more and more experiences and opportunities where you get to do that on a larger and larger scale. And so in this life, some of us that just seem further ahead in our creative capabilities, maybe we lived other lives before this, where we had to learn that the hard way. And maybe some people that are in this life that don't have a grip on their creativity, maybe in the previous life, they just chose to be silent and they chose to not express themselves and they chose to be a robot, essentially. Or maybe this is their first mortal experience and their soul has just recently ignited a little light in this universe of stars. Who knows? I think that this relates to creativity in a very clear way, which is that exercise your intuition and your uniqueness and your creativity and continue to choose that, choose creation, choose authenticity, choose love, choose empathy. And that will just continue to be magnified over the lifetime of your soul, whether that is finite or infinite. And all of these things really just tie back to creativity. How important it is to be you and only you. To stop looking at everyone else to see exactly what they're doing and just to do it your way. So we went all over the place in this episode. I just wanted to share those two theories of God with you. I think that they're more intertwined now than ever in my mind. And they're working together to form this kind of unified, that's the word, unified theory of God. And I'm probably going to coin my own phrase for it and more clearly define it. But I also want to be careful with doing that because, again, I don't know everything and it's just a theory and I need to be careful. I don't want to tell everyone that this is exactly how it is. I will say, if you are open to experimenting with new beliefs, try looking at the world through this lens, the lens that I just presented to you. Try to find these patterns. Trust yourself. Don't rely on a book or a talk or, you know, a sermon, a building, a family member. Go throughout your life. Notice things on your own. Draw these parallels and just see for yourself over time how these beliefs impact you. If they make you miserable, ditch them. But if they bring you a sense of fulfillment, maybe adopt them and refine them over time. That's what this is all about. Question everything. Question your beliefs and experiment with new ones. And it could unlock a whole new reality for you. Thanks for listening. Love you guys a lot. And next episode, we'll be talking about why I think, why I don't resonate with religion. With all that said, if you want condensed versions of these podcast episodes and you want to have access to my free articles on personal growth, then go ahead and click the link in the show notes or just go to nolanvoid.substack.com and you can subscribe to my Substack for free. All right. Catch you guys in the next one. Bye-bye.